I really should have brought out the chair today, or the stool, I guess is the right term. I'm going to do something a little different today. I want to tell a story. You can follow along throughout John chapter 11, and there will be passages that come up on the screen from time to time. But if you want, you can just listen. Many times Jesus would stand up to read, and he would sit down to preach or teach. I want to just change the tone a little bit. We've been dealing with this pathway to Jerusalem, this road to Jerusalem that Jesus is on. And he's right at the end. He is coming in now to Bethany. He will then go through Jericho, and then he will go on up to Jerusalem. But he knows what is before him. He has set his face to Jerusalem, which is why the Samaritans were so frustrated with Jesus. And Jesus, he knows what is about to come. He knows that the cross is in front of him. And we're on this road, and we're going to continue this all the way up until Easter time, or that Sunday of Resurrection Sunday. But Jesus, on his way, is going to spend some time with the family. Before he gets to Bethany, he gets word, we are told, that Lazarus is very sick. Lazarus' sisters, Martha and Mary, send Jesus this word, that the brother who loves him is sick. And the implication behind it is, come. That's the implication. Lazarus is sick. Come, heal him. There's so much we don't know about this family. We don't know their ages at all. We don't know their livelihood. And the more I study history, which I love, and biblical history especially, it is odd that this family of three siblings, Lazarus, Martha, Mary, are just that, a family of three siblings. In that day and age, that culture, young girls would have been betrothed at an early age, married at their late teenage years. Men would have married someone probably 10 years younger than them, but they would have developed some type of trade, some way of support, so that when they got married, they could take care of the person that they married. It wasn't an odd thing. It was because they needed to have a skill, a life. We know nothing about Lazarus, about Martha, about Mary. It's silence is odd to me. I've always thought of them as older, but who knows? They might have been younger. I don't know. What I know is that that family of siblings and Jesus have a depth of relationship with each other. And so when the sisters send this message to Jesus, Lazarus is sick. It is done so with an expectation. But I want to read to you a verse, verse 4. But when Jesus heard it, he said, "This illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it." So Jesus gets this message. Lazarus, whom you love, is sick. And Jesus, with that knowledge, waits. How? How can a God who loves wait? How can a friend with the power to heal, who can take a blind person and give him sight, why would he not rush to the bedside of someone he loves? Instead, he waits. What kind of God does that? The very next verse says, now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Mary and Lazarus. Here's my point. He loves them. This is not people he's not connected to. Granted, it's not technically family. I'm not going down that road, but this is someone he's got a relationship with. There is an expectation that Jesus will heal Lazarus. That is the expectation the sisters have. And Jesus refuses to go. In fact, he waits 2 days longer before he begins his journey. And just before he begins his journey, he has a conversation with his disciples. And Jesus uses some strange terminology in this conversation with his disciples. He says that Lazarus is asleep. Now they hear the message that Lazarus is very sick. They hear Jesus say that Lazarus is asleep. And then Jesus says, let's go so that I may wake him. And the disciples, they're like, buddy, if he's asleep, he's gonna wake up. Why are we going? You know, every time we go to Judea, you get in trouble. So what's the plan? Jeffrey vernacular, but read the passage, it's pretty close. They don't get it. Jesus says, he's dead. Thomas is really kind of right there with him. Well, let's all just go to Jerusalem. We'll die with him, Jesus, that is. So they make their way. They're on the road. This will be Jesus' final entrance. And they're outside of the town of Bethany. They get to the area of Bethany. And Lazarus has died and been in the tomb 4 days. Now, they're generally buried within a day. So we're looking at 4 to 5 days that he has been deceased. The bottom line is nobody doubts Lazarus is dead. There is zero doubt among anybody in Bethany, including the two sisters. Jesus arrives there. There's many Jews that have been there to console them. Martha hears that Jesus is outside, and she goes to meet him out on the side of town. And here's what Martha says, beginning with verse 21. Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you would have been here, my brother would not have died. But even now, I know whatever you ask from God, God will give you. We don't get inflection in the language. We often read into things. And I do because of the way both sisters are going to be dealing with Jesus. Her statement is if only. Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Is that an accusation? Is that a frustration? Is it a statement of great faith? Is it all of the above? I know even now, whatever you ask, God will give you. Again, the implication seems to be, and if you would have asked for him to live, he would have. I do think there's some blame going on. The if-onlys do that. I hear pain, and I hear if-only statements. If only you would have healed my parent, my spouse, my child. If only you would have opened that door for me to get that job. If only you would have taken away that sin from within me, I wouldn't have destroyed such a wonderful relationship. If only, Lord, if only you had statement is a statement that tells God what he should have done instead of what he did do. So yes, I think she's frustrated with Jesus. But Jesus, says to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? Martha, it's not I was. Martha, it's not I will be. Martha, I am. I am the resurrection and the life. That is who I am. You say, whatever I ask God, God will do for me. Let me tell you who I am. Do you believe I am? Do you believe that I am the resurrection and the life? Do you believe that everyone who believes in me will live even if they die, and those who live will never die? Do you believe that? I love Martha because she does what I have done too frequently in my past with God. She answers in the affirmative. She says, yes, Lord. I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming into the world. What does that mean? Again, I'm going to give you my understanding. Yes, I believe, but I don't have a clue of what you're really talking about. But I believe you. I believe who you are. I believe you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. That is what I believe. So I trust you. Do I understand? No, I do not. But do I believe? Yes, I do. She reaches deep within her for this faith. And I so appreciate that faith. I don't get all the answers. I would love to know all the answers. I want to know the whys and the how-tos and the what-fors, but I don't get them. And sometimes God's word just leaves it ambiguous. And I say, why? And God says, do you believe me? And I say, yes, but why? Do you believe me? Yes, I already told you that. Then let me be God. Why are you trying to play God, Jeffrey? Why are you trying to tell me what to do? Do we have a role reversal going on here? I love Martha. We pick on Martha because she wants to fix a nice meal and Mary wants to be at Jesus' feet. I love Martha because Martha is an all-in person. She has got a depth of faith. Jesus has a spiritual conversation with Martha. He doesn't actually have a spiritual conversation with Mary. He has it with Martha. She says, I know in the resurrection everybody's going to come out. I know that. He just simply says, I am. I'm the resurrection. You got a question is, do you believe it? I do. Martha privately goes to speak to Mary. And she tells her sister that Jesus is calling for her. And and Mary, I don't know why she stayed in the house when Martha got up. Maybe she's just a little peeved. I don't know what the problem is. But she gets up and she goes out to Jesus. She falls at his feet and she says the exact same thing her sister says. Lord, if only you would have been here, my brother would not have died. Does she worship him? Is she at his feet? Does she love him? Is she frustrated? Is it all sorts of emotions? Tears flowing down her face. She is weeping. She is crying. She's being consoled by these other ladies that have come there. She goes out to Jesus. She falls at his feet. And she just says, Lord, if you would have been here. If you'd have been here, if only you had have. Jesus knows what he is about to do. He knows that he is going to raise Lazarus from the dead. He's actually already said that to his disciples, whether they caught it or not. He knows what is in front of him after he leaves here and he starts that journey now onto Jerusalem. He knows all that is before him. In grief and in pain, we get two words. Jesus wept. That's what we get. Jesus is about to raise Lazarus from the dead. Those of us that know the story, sometimes we look at this and we think, why all this emotion? You're God. You're about to raise a person from the dead? And you're weeping? I'm not just talking sympathy. I'm talking empathy. I'm talking Jesus looks at Mary. He doesn't seem to have a discussion with her. He's like, show me where he is laid. They walk to the tomb and Jesus weeps. And the Jews that are with them are saying, can't the one that opened the eyes of the blind, couldn't he have healed him? And by the way, the answer is yes. He could have. But Jesus weeps. I do believe that there are times we just think, God, where are you? And God is weeping with us. His emotions, as any parent is with a child, are so connecting to us. And you may say, well, he is God. Why would he weep when I weep? Because he is God, he weeps while you weep. That is why. Because he hurts. We get a phrase that is used twice in this passage, and that is that Jesus is deeply moved in his spirit and greatly troubled. And I know there's theological arguments around, you know, he's really weeping over sin and what it's done, and he wished he wouldn't have to bring Lazarus back from the dead. Fine, if that's where you are, it's not where I am. Jesus hurts because the people he loved hurt. And because he's walking with them. And that's what you do. And inside he is struggling, which is interesting for Jesus. They get to the tomb. And Jesus says, roll away the stone, take away the stone. Martha jumps right in. Nope, don't do that, Jesus. There's an odor, and you know it. He has been dead 4 days. Don't open the tomb. Don't humiliate the dead. Don't do this. Martha, Jesus replies back to her. Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God? So they took away the stone. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me. But I said this on account of the people standing around, that they may believe that you sent me. When he had said these things, he cried out with a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. Martha, I told you, you got to believe me. And then he prays. And did you catch his prayer? Jesus doesn't say, God, I really need you on this one. I kind of stepped all in on it. I need you to bring him out. It's not what he says. In absolute confidence, Jesus just thanks God. Thank you for hearing me. Thank you for doing what you have always done. And God, I have said this because the point of all of this, God, is so that people will believe. That's the point of all of it. And he cries out with a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. A resurrected life. Lazarus comes out of the tomb. Comes out of a tomb in his burial clothes. He has been bound in those clothing. And Jesus says to the people, unbind him from his burial clothes. What's the takeaway for me on this road to Jerusalem? Well, man, I can see myself all over this story. I'll be really honest. Number one, I'm Lazarus. I've been dead. And like Lazarus, Jesus has called me to life, a resurrected life. I'm born again. I've been Martha and Mary. I've been the if only statements. I've been the I love you, God, and I trust you, but I don't get you. I've been there too. I'm all of it. I'm all of it. But this resurrected life is a taking off of the clothing of the dead. And I guess that's my question to you. What clothing are you wearing? Are you still bound in the clothing of sin and death? Have you been brought back to life, but yet not lived the resurrected life? By the way, part of our role as a church, to take this metaphor a little farther, is to unbind the clothing of those who have been raised again. As in, help them to live life. It is a story that I needed to hear. Because it's in all that Jesus has gone through, in all that he is about to go through, what Jesus does is he's a compassionate God, a God of all comfort, who comforts us in our time of need, so that we can comfort those with the same comfort that we have received from him. By the way, that's 2 Corinthians chapter 1. He is a God of confidence. Lord, Father, I know you have heard me. And he is a God that calls for conviction. Do you believe it? Do you believe who I am? So I end with just saying the same thing Jesus did. Are you ready to live? Are you ready to come out? Are you ready to be free? Away from the trappings that have bound you and into a life of abundance. What do you need to do? You've got to take that first step. And you've got to come to him. And if we can help you to do that, then won't you come as we stand and as we sing?